Hey guys, today I was lucky enough to speak with the beautiful Robin Sicily, author of Eat the Wind. Now, unfortunately, at the very beginning, we have a little bit of an audio mishap with it dropping in and out a couple of times. But once we get that sorted, there's a good 50 or so minutes of uninterrupted listening. So enjoy the podcast and let us know what you think. Hey guys. Today, I was lucky enough to speak with the beautiful Robin Sicily, author of Eat the Wind. Now, unfortunately, at the very beginning, we have a little bit of an audio mishap with it dropping in and out a couple of times. But once we get that sorted, there's a good 50 or so minutes of uninterrupted listening. So enjoy the podcast and let us know what you think.
Ellie.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you good now.
I wonder why that is then.
I don't know. How strange is that?
Hey, well, let's put it down to magic and...
Oh, God. We'll just go with it. Okay, well, at least we know it's working now. I'm kind of tempted to just stay on here, and we might just have to have this as part of the podcast because I can't trim it out on this app, but I suppose it's better than having no volume.
Exactly. Let's just run with it.
Okie dokie. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Robin. This is our retake on our podcast because unfortunately our first one didn't quite go to plan, but we're finally managing to get there.
Goodness so, for that, Ellie.
What was that, sorry?
I said thank goodness for that, Ellie.
We're making it there. So anyway, Robin, can you please give us a bit of a background on you and what you do?
Okay, well, I started working with wild horses about 20 years ago, and I've had the most incredible journey with so many wild horses, and I wrote a book about my journey with them because I thought it was pretty amazing, and I just wanted to share it with other people. And the wild horses have really taught me so much about horses, but also about life. And that's actually what I wanted to share in my book, I guess.
Yeah, that's fantastic. They definitely have a big impact on us, don't they?
Oh, gosh, yes. You just learn so much about horses, but I think you learn a lot about yourself as well. One of the biggest things that I learned was patience.
Yes, because you definitely can't try and rush things, especially without losing the essence of the horse, I guess.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And I think with me, I don't know about other people, but I didn't have very much experience with horses when I first started with the wild horses. And so I was actually on the same learning curve as they were. And I think that was beneficial for me and for them, really.
Yes, because do you know what's interesting? I was listening to a really great podcast the other day with Jim Masterson of the Masterson Method, and he said that he kind of just fell into doing the body work with the horses, and he didn't have any background in doing body work. He wasn't even interested, but he really enjoyed watching what the horses did and their responses and their reactions. And he said even because in it.
Yeah, I think, yes, when I first started out, I wasn't, I mean, it turned out to be a serendipitous journey because I didn't actually know what I was getting into, and I had no idea where they were going to take me. And where they've taken me is somewhere completely different than I could have ever imagined in my whole life. And I think that's the exciting part. Well, it was for me is was learning about the horses and learning about their brains and learning how sentient they are.
Yes, neat, isn't it? And it's kind of a bit of a planner.
Yeah.
But really make me proud.
Yes, well, actually, your voice is sort of cutting out. The line has gone a bit weird again, but I sort of got the gist of what you said. That's what I was always a bit of a planner too, and actually, I found that it's best that I just chuck my plans in the bottom drawer and just live at the absolute moment and not have any expectations and just work with what I had right in front of me at that time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hope this is going to work, Ali, because your voice is really cutting out, but it might be okay on your end, maybe just mine.
You're completely.
Oh, that's good.
So fingers crossed.
I'll try and just work with this for a while and see how we go.
Cool. That led you to working with wild horses.
I didn't have any knowledge at all. What happened with me is it was during the big muster of 1997 when thousands of horses were going to be slaughtered, and all the stallions were definitely going to be slaughtered. They decided that they wouldn't slaughter them and they'd offer them up for auction, but not the stallions. And my friend, and she was also my riding instructor and an incredibly knowledgeable lady, her and I decided that we should get some of the stallions because at least we could save them. And I lived on a farm and we had the most amazing set of yards. They were covered yards and they were huge. And so we had the ideal facilities. And so that's when I got started. And the first lot of stallions arrived. And I knew nothing about them whatsoever. All I knew was wild horses were coming to the farm and I was excited. When they arrived, when they arrived, it was totally different than what I imagined. I thought these amazing, dignified, proud creatures would be, running off the truck into my yard, and that wasn't how it was at all. What happened was these wild horses tiptoed off the truck because they were too scared to come off the truck, and all I saw was very vulnerable, scared animals, and they just really touched my heart. And that's how I sort of started, and I knew they needed help.
Yes. To the new world.
Yes. To adjust into the new world, but also they needed to be understood. I needed to learn to understand where they'd come from, who they were, and what they'd lost. And it meant a lot to them, because they are sentient creatures and they'd lost their companions and so on. And yeah, so I just sort of started out with empathy, really. Sorry, Ellie.
What is that? look like?
I for whatever reason, I was able to feel what they were feeling. And so it was initially I was actually scared of the stallions, you know, because I'd read about how, you know, they can be fairly dangerous and all that sort of thing. And, you know, when I started to walk into the yards with them, you know, they weren't charging at me or being aggressive at all. And I learned that they were just as scared as I was. And
Yes.
you know, so therefore it was up to me to be the bigger person and do the best I could for them.
And those initials, what's your
Okay, well, the first thing with the wild horse is that they need to be tamed, and so to tame them, you have to earn their trust. You have to be trustworthy to them, and you have to be reliable and consistent. And the other thing, when we would put the horse into the yard for the first time, I would always acknowledge the horse. I would just walk in and just stand there quietly and just try and pass on my thoughts that I was there to help them, not to hurt them or harm them in any way. Yeah, and it was just that cut out again, Hallie, sorry.
How did you know to do that? Work with this idea of passing on what we're trying to achieve.
For me, it was just instinctive. I just felt, and when you observe the horse, and this is one of the things that happened to me, is I learnt to be observant, and the horse will show you the signs of how he is feeling. You just watch his face and his body language and his eye and his ear, and he'll tell you how comfortable he is or how uncomfortable he isn't. And so the idea, of course, isn't it, is to make the horse feel comfortable. And so if you step towards the horse and he showed signs of being really, really uncomfortable, then you just take a step back.
Instead of it's instead until
That's right. Everything that we did was about making the horse relaxed with it, with whatever movement that we were doing. And obviously initially just walking into the yard and being in there with him, you just wanted him to stand still. And so when he was standing still, I would always take a step back, and then I would just relax, let him relax. And then I would move forward again and just inch a little bit closer and a little bit closer. But we also used a catching pole with a loop on it to, you know, we didn't have the time, or actually we didn't even have the knowledge to sit in a paddock with them and give them grass and all that sort of thing, because we had too many. But
Right.
we did hand feed them hay in the very beginning, but there were some that weren't ready to actually take hay out of our hands, and so we just had to get them used to our presence and get them used to having a catching pole in the yard and then the catching pole touching them. But they would always have to be relaxed before we moved on to the next step.
What you're working on. Oh, what? Or did you?
No, we did the same thing, the same process with each horse, but the time involved changed depending on the horse's temperament. I mean, some of the wild horses were that, well, appeared to be that easy that it was just ridiculous. You know, like I had one wild stallion back into me the first time I stood in the yard with him, and he was with about four or five others, and as he was backing into me, I was thinking, "Oh, I'm not happy. What do I do here?" And I looked at him and I thought, "Well, he doesn't seem to be being showing any aggressive behavior." And I thought, "Oh, well, I'll just sort of stay here and see what happens." And honestly, he just backed straight into me, and so I just put my hand out and scratched his bum, and he just stayed there. And I thought, well, that's what he wanted. I thought, pardon? Oh, I didn't hear that. Sorry, Ellie.
Was
Exactly. And he was a very easy horse. I mean, easy as in, you know, you had to do everything step by step and slowly and gently. But he was very mellow and very you know, he just sort of liked you straight away. Whereas you had others who were at the other end of the spectrum who didn't absolutely want a bar of you whatsoever.
Did like now was I were type of that was easier or more difficult?
Oh, absolutely. You know, every horse is an individual and they all take a different amount of time. And I found that most often the most difficult horses were the most intelligent and they took the most amount of time. But they were also the most rewarding because once you got their trust, they really wanted to try for you, and they became the most loyal, amazing animals. You know, they were just incredible.
That's fantastic. And do you think one difficult fighting the traits there?
I actually found that the mares were usually more difficult than the stallions. The mares were, they had, are usually, and I think they came, the mares that came in were probably, well, the ones that I'm talking about now, they were in their bands out in the wild. And those dominant mares certainly had very strong opinions on how things should just be, and they had to be treated with the utmost respect because you know, they would only tolerate what they would tolerate. And so, you know, working with such a variety of horses was really well, it really helps your learning. And actually, Ellie, I actually found that I learned from my mistakes. And And what we did is, I actually kept a journal because we had so many horses that when you worked with them, you'd get confused if you didn't write down exactly what you'd been doing and how they reacted. And so everything was recorded, and at the end of the day, I would write up my journal, and then I would reflect on, why was I having a problem? Why did the horse react like that? And then I would sort of figure out, well, actually, the horse reacted like that because you didn't do your job right. It wasn't the horse's fault, it was my fault. I rushed the horse, or maybe I was getting greedy and I was asking for more than the horse was able to give me. And I find that that's one of the human things, isn't it? It's really hard for us to resist asking for more.
Might say something huge. That's interesting, and I'm definitely finding that with then I had and just of time. Go. Month can and it was last then this quite so the door he bit of report, but this mirror that I've got here. Scratch it. Just not well. It, that we're okay and we're not going to do anything to harm her.
Yes, well, your voice was cracking up and I couldn't really hear what you were saying, but I think the gist of it is that you were noticing the difference between the stallion and the mare.
Yes.
The mare, if I've heard you right, the mare is a little less curious and a little less giving. She's more resistant.
Yep, she's just not interested at all.
And that I think is a mare thing. But what I found, Ellie, is I had a mare like that too. And so what I did is I actually left her alone. I just left her be, and I would bring her in with the other horses because they all live together. And I would just carry on, and I would actually just ignore her. And I thought, because I was having problems with her, she was resistant, and she just didn't want to know me at all. And I tried every way, and I. Hi, Ellie.
Hello.
Right, I can hear you.
Woohoo,
Let's do it.
I can hear you. Let's do this. So you were just starting to tell me about the mirror that you found to be very tricky.
with her, what I decided to do after just having failure after failure, trying to, work with her, she was just totally resistant. She just didn't want to know me. And after trying everything, I thought, okay, I'm just going to leave her alone. And when I say leave her alone, she was in my herd of horses. So, there were 10 or more at that stage living together. So she would just come in with them, and I just totally ignored her. And that went on for certainly weeks, probably into months. And then one day she just walked into the yard and looked at me and basically said, "Well, I'm sort of ready for you to do something now." And so that's where I started with her, and now she is she's incredibly intelligent. She really has got a great mind, and is quite opinionated, but she's very soft, and she just loves being rubbed and scratched, and she'll put her little nose in my hair and acknowledge when I rub her. She rubs me back in my hair, and I have a lovely hairdo by the time she's finished.
Oh, that's so lovely. It is amazing, isn't it? Just how when you're, I guess when you're gifted with that time as well, how and you giving them the time, it does all just come together.
Exactly, and I appreciate that a lot of people just don't have that time for whatever reason or other, but if you're going to work with a wild horse, you have to be prepared that you might get one that is going to take an awful amount of time, and you just have to go with it. But I found, even working with the stallions on the farm, we had 10 of them when they first, when I first got the horses. And then a week later, we had another truckload or two of wild horses arrive. And so we had to let our boys out and just go out into a paddock for the time that we were training the other guys. And I found we put those stallions out into a paddock, and they would have been out in on their own for about a month. And we brought them back in, and they hadn't forgotten anything at all that they had been taught in the meantime. And we found they came in better. We had better results. They were happier. They seemed to have decided that during that time out that actually we were okay, and it was actually okay, quite okay to come back into the yards. And they were even more curious and more relaxed and really happy to learn.
Oh, that's fantastic. It makes me wonder as well with my boy Targaryen from this muster, because I haven't had the time, and most of the time he has just been out in the paddock. So I think probably the same, that he has just got into the swing of things with all the other horses around, and I haven't put a whole heap of pressure on him, and every experience has just kind of been like a really nice, enjoyable one, because I haven't asked a lot of him.
Exactly, and it's always been positive.
Yes.
Yeah,
Yeah.
I really, really believe that giving them time out is the secret of handling horses, whether it's wild horses or domestic horses, because I think when you're even training the horse and you're teaching it something, I don't know what, it could be just asking them to, oh, I don't know. I'm just trying to think of an example. But with me, I would teach the horse something, and when he had tried, and you reward the little try, you always reward every little tiny try, I would step away from the horse just to give him time. Just time out, and then go back and reward him again and ask him again, please do that. And It's the same thing, I think, just giving them time out in their training and giving them time out when they're wild. Yeah, I think it really works.
Yeah, just giving them a little bit of a moment to think on it. I guess it's the same for us, isn't it? If we feel like we're under the hammer and having to perform and really being pushed, it's quite stressful.
Very, very, and it gives them time to process, just as it gives us time. And funny you should say that, Ellie, because what I did with my horses, I've gone down a different road to other people just because this is what I wanted to do. And oh God, there goes my mind. Of course, I've forgotten exactly what I was going to say. Oh, yeah, I know. What I decided to do was I wasn't going to do anything with the horse or to the horse that I wouldn't like done myself. And so that sort of started off with.
Dokie, we're back again. So, Robin, tell us a little bit about your book and I guess what it's about.
Well, the book was primarily written because, 15 years ago, I'd been working with the horses for, 5 years perhaps by then. But when we our reason for saving the horses was so we could handle them and train them and then sell them on to really good homes so they could have a good future. What we found was there was so much public resistance to the actual Kaimanawa horse. I think the general opinion was that they were basically just possums with manes and tails. And we found that the horses, we just couldn't actually sell them because there wasn't a market for them. And we actually stopped advertising them as Kaimanawas, and people would arrive to have a look, and then they were pleased with the horse, because the horses were so kind and honest, which is one of the things I think is one of the things about Kaimanawas, that they are really honest and they are very sweet and curious, apart from the odd mare or two. And then that would win them over. But so I wanted to change people's opinions about the horse. I wanted them to find out that actually these horses are so cool, it's just ridiculous. And I also, because as a young person, I'd grown up loving horses, but I'd never had the opportunity to ever own one. I wanted to share my story with people who would have perhaps loved to have done what I did with working with the wild horses. And so I just wanted to share my story with them. And so that was really why I really wrote it. And then, of course, in the process of writing, things change. And because I learnt from my own writing about, I had lots of aha moments. And so I really enjoyed the process of actually writing the book as well as working with the horses. So yeah, basically I just wanted to share it.
Fantastic. And so just kind of piqued my interest about the bad reputation, I guess, that the Kaimanawas had. Why do you think that was? Was that to do with the media
I
or
absolutely have no idea because usually people had no experience with them, or perhaps there was people who had experiences, but their experiences were negative because they didn't understand the wild horse and they would put far too much pressure on the horse. And these horses really don't like too much pressure, and depending on their personality, they'll either shut down or they will become aggressive. And I think that's where a lot of people made mistakes and the horses would become aggressive, and so they were labelled as dangerous, and so people just didn't want them.
So it's a little bit like how the thoroughbreds get a bit of a bad reputation as well.
That's right, and it's totally undeserved.
Yes, yep, completely. That's interesting. And do you think that now the Kais are starting to get a better reputation with the initiative of KHH and other organisations?
Oh, most definitely. You know, the Kai Mano is proving that they really are worthy and that they will be suitable for the same disciplines that other breeds of horses are. Not every well-bred pony is going to be a Grand Prix show jumper. Some of them will
Yes.
be, but most of them won't be. It's the same with Kai Manoas. Some of them are going to be Grand Prix jumping ponies. Most of them probably won't be, but they will be really, really suited for other stuff. So, I mean, it's just like anything, isn't it, Ellie?
Yeah.
You know, horses for courses, some are suited for just being a pleasure to have around and to ride, and as ponies for families, or trekking, or show jumping, or hunting, or whatever. It depends on the particular horse, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's right. And it's quite interesting because I've got a pony called Chrome, and somehow he's become my main horse, all 14, two of him. And he's just incredibly sensitive, and like if you kiss too loud, he'll fly up into a canter, and I love him like that. But lots of people say to me, "Oh, your daughter is gonna be one lucky girl," and I say, "Oh gosh, no! Like, there's no way I would, well, one, give him up, but also he just would not be suitable for a child, especially not at this stage." Yet Targaryen, he's got that kids pony nature, like so trustworthy and curious, and he likes cuddles and all of that sort of stuff. So I don't know whether he'll make a Grand Prix show jumper or not, but he's definitely going to be a great kids pony for her.
And the thing about him is he's going to love being a child's pony. You know,
Yes.
that's his destiny, and he's going to make your daughter or whoever, somebody very, very happy and bring a lot of joy to them. I mean, I've got
Yes.
horses that range from, you know, just like your guys, you know, really, really quiet and gentle and loving and honest, to the other extreme where my boy called Chester, he's a Kai Mana, and he's probably about 15 two hands high.
Wow.
And working with him is like working with a butterfly on the other end. You know, he is so sensitive and so reactive, and I have to be so aware of everything. Now, he's now 17 years old, so
Wow.
he's been with me all these years because he came to me as a youngster. Now, he is no different at this age at 17 as he was when he was 7 months old. That's when I got him.
Wow, how interesting. So it kind of just
He
goes to show, doesn't it? It's so much, it's not always nurture, a lot of it is nature as well.
Actually, that's one of the fascinating things because I've had these horses for so long. I mean, some of them have lived with me for 20 years, so I've got to know them really, really well. You know, we just know each other. It's almost like having an interspecies family. And what
Yeah.
I've noticed is their characters, their personalities have not changed since their arrival. They are still exactly the same. You know, the same things would bother them now, but less so, of course, because, you know, they're obviously used to this world. But they're just exactly who they were. And, you know, just like us people. You know, I think this is the fascinating thing. The horses and humans We are just so similar. We have the same emotions and reactions, and I find their behavior fascinating. That's really one of the things that pushes my buttons.
Yes. Yeah, it is so interesting, isn't it? And just with you talking about how that really so interests me that after all this time they're still the same. And I was talking with a friend yesterday, and she has a very, very sensitive horse, and she said maybe like she's been working with him for quite some years, and she said he's she still has to always he's very, like so much better than he was, like nobody could stay on him when she first got him. But she said she still has to work hard every time to get him to let go of the brace in his body and to relax. And once she's worked through that, then he's totally fine. And she said maybe one day we'll work through that, I don't know. But then we kind of went it led into this discussion of they're just like people, like you get some people who kind of just cruise through life and nothing really phases them, and then you get other people who maybe are naturally quite anxious, and they might have to work really hard doing things like, I don't know, meditation or making sure that they're mindful and all of those sorts of things to make sure that they keep in that calm space. And I think horses are the same.
Oh, they absolutely are. And like with this horse of mine, Chester, I always have to be consistent. If I do some, if I was to do something different, he would be most unhappy. And I've had him for 17 years. I mean, I just adore him, working with him. Because I work with them without any gear on, I just we they live in a herd, and we do everything sort of as a herd. But they come out, they have a lot of contact with me, and I mean, I talk to them and ask them with my body language, what I want them to do or what I don't want them to do. Because I've got some fairly gregarious boys who love being boys, and they have to be growled out every now and again because they get a bit exuberant, and especially when we're in the confines of the yard or something, I have to be able to tell them no, that behaviour isn't acceptable.
It's not wanted right now.
No, because they're very playful.
Yes. What, save that for the
Yeah, exactly. I find too, well, one of the interesting things that I learned early on, and I had a whole lot of mares in my herd at that stage, and I went down to bring them in, and I at this stage, I mean, I do things a bit differently now, but this stage they lived in a night paddock, and I go and open the gate. And this particular morning, I went down to get them. I was really cross. Something had gone wrong in my little morning life, and I was, very growly in my own self. But I wasn't growly. It had nothing to do with the horses. Anyway, I went down there and opened the gate and called them like I normally would, and they came, oh, reasonably close. And then they looked at each other and they said, are you going to go near her? And one said, nah. And they said, nah, neither am I. And they come out. And I thought, I was still growly. And so I went into the paddock and I said, come on, you guys, get out of here, blah, blah, blah. And they said, not on your Nelly. We are not coming anywhere near you. And I had to go away, and I had to think about what just happened. And I thought, oh my God, they are so sensitive that they realized that I was in a cross mood, and they wouldn't actually come out of their paddock.
How
And I thought,
incredible.
wow, that's huge.
That is really big, isn't it? And it's such a great lesson for ourselves to not take our stuff to them.
Absolutely. That was such a good learning thing for me. And it sort of taught me that when I was going to have less, give the horses a lesson, was I said a little mantra for myself to set myself up for success. And that included the temperament that I was in. Was I in a good headspace to teach them something? And was the environment nice and calm for them to be receptive to learn? And if I said no, my mind is not in a good place, or the environment, some roadworks arrived or whatever, I'd think, okay, well, we're not actually going to learn anything today. All we're going to do is spend some quality time, and I'm just going to give you a brush.
Yeah, that's great. So just being able to be flexible to fit yourself and them and the environment.
That's right. Because if you think about it, if you're a child and you're put into a classroom and something goes pear-shaped in that classroom, you can't expect children to learn in that environment. And horses are no different. You can't expect the best from them if they haven't got the best place to learn in.
Yes, that's right. It was interesting. I was listening to Patrick King talk the other day about this sort of thing, and he was talking about how horses will, and I guess it's the same for people, they will only learn when they're in an environment where they're calm and safe and all of those sort of things that promote good learning, I guess. But then they can also learn that, well, they're not really learning, but they're from association, and so that might be that they're in a stressed out state and things are happening, and so then they have associated behaviors, and so I guess those are sort of the more negative behaviors that we can acquire. So it just really, it's such a big thing, isn't it, to make sure that the horse is calm and we're calm before we go about doing any learning or teaching.
Exactly. If you want the best results, then you've got to set it up the best that you can, and you can't expect good results. At just as you say, the horses, they'll learn bad things just as easily as good things, and they only learn what we either teach them or surround them with, and they will react. And they don't ever forget.
That's right. It's so interesting, isn't it?
Yes. But I think learning by your mistakes is one of the best things. Well, it certainly was for me. Yeah, and keeping it simple. I think sometimes we overcomplicate things with in our own heads. And I also found for me that keeping the lessons very short and keeping them sweet was the best way to get the best results for what I did. And the other thing too with the wild horses is I didn't talk very much, and I still don't talk too much because our voices, it's just a whole lot of white noise to them. And I think they switch off. So, especially when the horses were wild, I only spoke to them, like thank you or good boy, good girl, nice, and just sort of kept it like that. And like my horses now know my words.
Yeah, because you're consistent and not speaking all the time.
But I also th they also sense joy from you as well. And like with my horses, we also have lots of fun, and I can laugh at them. I guess they can laugh at me, because I think that's really important to have that good. Well, these horses make me smile from the inside out anyway, because they
Yes.
are a joy to be with.
Oh, they
Yeah.
are. It's so important, isn't it? I was just thinking about even learning to smile when things go wrong. Like the other week, I arrived at a dressage show, my first one for the season, and for My Little Pony, it was only his second ever show. And we arrived there late, don't get any time to warm up, and hello, we're in the indoor arena. And so I just thought, oh gosh, like this, I already knew it wasn't going to go.
Yeah, you had really set yourself up for success
Oh,
there, Ellie.
totally. Yeah, total success. And so we
Yeah.
did some beautiful loops in the dressage arena, and some stops where there weren't any in the dressage test. And but I just laughed and smiled and told him he was a good boy because it wasn't his fault. And
Exactly.
yeah, and we didn't take it to heart. And then our next dressage test in the afternoon, I knew that, well, I had to learn from my mistakes and get out there early and get warmed up and work on the little bits and pieces that didn't go to plan in the first one, and we won our class, so
Isn't that awesome? That really
yes.
is. And the funny thing, well, it's not funny, but if you'd reacted differently in your first test, if you'd got frustrated with yourself, your lovely little horse would have felt that, and he would have learned that it actually wasn't a very positive experience. But because you reacted the right way, and he went into a second test, and he did his work for you, and so you were both really rewarded.
Yep, totally. And I think, like you say, had I reacted negatively in that first one, it would have set me up to be negative in the second one as well.
Exactly, and things would have gone pear-shaped, and it would have given him a very negative experience of being in there, and you're only starting out, so you did the best thing you possibly could for for your boy.
And I think linking that back to working with the wild horses as well, it's the same, isn't it? Being able to laugh when it doesn't quite happen how we thought it might
Oh
have.
gosh, yes. Oh my God, yes. I mean, I have to laugh because I made heaps of mistakes. Like it was just endless. And like I was, as I said in the beginning, we would catch the horses with a catching pole, and a loop of the lunge line would be looped around. And that is quite a, there's quite an art in doing that,
Yeah,
And
I can
I can remember
imagine.
I caught one horse, but the loop didn't go round its neck, it went round its belly. And
Uh-oh.
I thought, oh my God, how am I going to do, how am I going to deal with this? And so instead of panicking, I just thought, okay, oh gosh, I sort of did laugh, and I thought, oh shit, actually. And so the horse wasn't accustomed to having it round its belly, and so obviously it ran, and it basically ran itself out of the loop. And so,
Ah, interesting.
and another time I went to catch one, and I caught the pole in the yard. But I mean, and you just laugh,
The
it
pole
all
in the
worked
yard.
out.
Yep, you have to. And you just learn from each thing. And it's probably one of the biggest things I see when I'm teaching people is that a lot of people are too scared to try because they might get it wrong. But I think that luckily the horses don't hold it against us too much.
No, they don't. They're very forgiving. I mean, if you were going to do something with malice, well, obviously they're not going to forgive you for that. But if you're honest, because they do recognize integrity, and yeah, and they'll forgive you. We're not perfect, and they're not either. But they're just the most agreeable animals, because they do want to try for you, don't they?
Oh, just hugely.
Mm. Yeah.
I was thinking about when you were talking about not talking a lot as well, and I've been thinking quite a bit about that lately, and I think there's a difference between talking to the horse to, like you say, like say good boy or something like that, and then when we see some people who talk non-stop to the horse, and I think that perhaps that can be a reflection of what is going on for them internally and perhaps a lack of calm and peace in their own mind and self. And I think that then transfers onto the horse as well. And so I've been quite, yeah, just giving that a lot of thought and also being mindful that that I'm not, even if it is not external chatter, but that I haven't got internal chatter going on in my mind as well, and making sure that my mind, especially working with wild ones, that my mind is kind of like at a calm, centered, peaceful place rather than going a million miles.
Oh, absolutely. And that's one of the things that you learn pretty quickly when you're working with the wild horse, isn't it? You know, whatever you're feeling is going to be transferred onto them. And if you're worried, they are going to think, ah, she's worried. Okay, there's something to worry about. What should I worry about? You know, and being mindful, as you say, Ellie, is really so important. And just to be in the calmest place and to be focused. You know, you're working with this horse. It's a big, strong animal, and it's focused on you. And you can only do your job if you are absolutely focused on what you are actually doing and how the animal is responding to you.
Yeah, that's right. It was funny the other day I was working with this mare and we had a really lovely moment and I thought, oh, I'm gonna pull my phone out and take a photo of this moment. And do you know, as soon as I pulled my phone out, the connection was lost and she just kind of turned and walked off and I laughed to myself because I thought well she's noticed that I'm not present with her anymore, so she's like, oh. See you later then.
Exactly. I mean, the wild horses, their senses are so acute, aren't they?
Oh
You know,
yes.
I mean, you can hold up one finger, they notice that. They just notice everything. And actually, too, this is good. Like, you know, I said before, I've had these horses for so long. They still notice as much now as they did when they were first wild.
That's
You know?
so lovely.
Yeah, they're so present, and they are so engaged.
That's great. Well, I guess that's kudos to you because you've been able to retain that and not shut them down or tune them out to their innate senses.
Yeah, thanks, Ellie. That's kind of you to say, but I also think they live in a permanent herd,
Yeah, lovely.
just as they would in the wild. And I think the dynamics of their wild herd life sort of still exists. And so they're in a happy environment amongst themselves. And I think that makes a real big difference to them emotionally, because if the horse has got to be right emotionally before it can be right physically for you to do anything with it, really.
Yes, yep, that's so
Yeah.
true.
Yeah, and so if they're happy with you and they're relaxed with you know, things are going to be so much better for everybody, for you know, the whole thing. And you know, having my guys being able to all live together as they do really, really helps. It helps their just their whole well-being.
Yeah, we really notice that when we have a problem. Well, I shouldn't say problem horses, but horses with people problems come to us, and the first thing we do is put them in a herd situation because they learn so much from that. And we've got two herds here at the moment, and it's just amazing. Actually, we've got a Tama's herd and then Targaryen's herd, and I think the Kais especially, I noticed they teach these horses so much, and it doesn't take long, maybe like 1 to 2 weeks before that horse starts to settle, and you see a lot of the problem behaviors start to disappear as well. And I think that is largely from just being in the herd and not really even much to do with me or what I'm doing at all either.
Exactly, because they are being allowed to be a horse.
Yeah.
It's really important for a horse to be allowed to be a horse. It's so simple, Ellie.
It is, isn't it? It sounds
Yeah.
stupid when we say it because it's like palm to the face.
Well, I mean, your two Kais are being very kind. I guess because mine live in a permanent band. And they're a pretty tight group, although, they have the dynamics. They have the alpha, the bossy one, and the one down the bottom of the pecking order and all that. That's pretty normal. But I tell you what, if any horses arrived into the paddock in the next door property, now there've never been horses there before. My four boys were going to try and break down the fence to kill them.
Oh, wow, they were not impressed.
And
Wow.
I've had domestic horses come here to graze, and my horses have tried to kill them over the fence.
Oh, how interesting. I guess because they've been in such a steady herd for a long time that any interruption to it would not go down well.
Oh, absolutely not. Like they're viewed as interlopers, and they have got to be dispensed. And
You are not
honestly,
welcome.
I've had some quite hair-raising moments. My beautiful, darling, honest, kind kaimanawas turn into these flipping, raging monsters, and I just didn't think that, they had it in them. But honestly, I've had to rescue a mare that I'd sort of worked a long time to introduce into my herd. It wasn't like she'd only been here a few weeks, she'd been here several months, and honestly, they were going to kill her.
Wow, that is incredible. How interesting. Yeah, and it's interesting because well, Targaryen, he's still a stallion at the moment, so his herd is just all geldings. And he's the both him and Tama are passive leaders, and so they don't cause any drama, but they also don't like all they have to do, like say one of the horses kind of threatened to take Targaryen on yesterday. I think he wanted his feed or something, and all Targ had to do was just like look at him and he knew.
Oh, absolutely. Just a flick of the ear or a movement of the hind leg, that's enough to send them off.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And then Tama's herd, he has the mares with him, and it's just such a lovely group. But even one time I had a stallion come to me, a 3-year-old stallion, and he had some pretty terrible manners. He'd had people be either too soft on him, the woman in his family, and then the father was too hard on him. So it had created this kind of monster in him of being fearful, but at the same time very confident to climb all over you, which was is not fun when you have a 16, 2, and a 3-year-old stallion. And so anyway, I put him in with Tama's herd, and it was quite interesting to watch. Tama put himself between just very like quietly, you know, like he just has his head down and is grazing, but has his eyes on the stallion, and he put himself between his herd and the stallion. And I don't think the stallion had very, I don't think he'd been in with other horses a lot or at all, and because he didn't know how to be a horse, and he kind of worked his way in towards Tama, and then picked and picked and picked and picked at him, and Tama sort of put up with it and would just like half-heartedly shoo him off, and then he just the stallion just wasn't learning, so Tama just went for him, and he got him a good one, and the stallion learned after that, and then he put himself at the other end of the paddock, and so I thought, well, I better not leave him in here overnight because something might happen, and I took him out, and he walked quietly at the end of the lead and was a lamb, and that was such a huge turning point for that horse. And I mean, like, I wouldn't have liked to have had to do what Tama did, but I guess he did my job for me in that instance.
Yeah, exactly. And isn't it sad at the same time? I mean, the
Yes.
horse, the 3-year-old stallion was obviously very confused,
So
and
confused.
it's sort of really sad that horses have got to learn to be horses, but that's a fact of life, isn't it? In the way that we keep most of the horses today.
It is, isn't it? And it's sad that they miss out on just learning how to be a horse.
It's like I had this horse, this mare, and she had been mustered in as a foal, and people had bought this filly foal for their grandchildren. And anyway, obviously they weren't horsey people, and it didn't really work out. And this foal turned into a young mare who was very opinionated, and the people couldn't do much with her. Anyway, she was sent here, and I've still got her now, actually.
Oh,
And
neat.
so when she arrived, she hadn't been halted. She'd never had her feet trimmed or been drenched or anything, and she was very pushy and bolshy and what have you. And so I put her in my herd as well, and that's how she learned. Oh, because the filly, when she was first at these people's place, they put her in a paddock with two donkeys, and so she learnt to behave like a donkey.
Yes, which is quite different to a horse.
And so when she arrived, she used to use her back feet, her hind feet, to just kick out with no warning.
Oh gosh, yes.
And so I put her into my herd, and like, she was pretty full of herself, and she tried to sort of take them on, and my mare, who was the leader of the herd at that time, Gina, just very quietly said, "We don't have that nonsense around here," and she really put her in a place. And like, the other horses have never really, really taken to her, even after all these years. I mean, they put up with her and what have you, but she still has retained a bit of that sort of horse donkey stuff.
Yes, so interesting, isn't it? And how they are kind of a little bit outcast when they don't quite speak the same language.
And it hasn't actually changed, Ellie. Like, the other horses, they will give her a wide berth. I mean, most of them will say, "You move off, move off, please," sort of thing. But you know, they generally sort of give her a bit of a wide berth, even after all these years. So, you
that's
know,
so interesting, isn't it? Yeah, I guess it just shows how well we or the environment that they're in can set them up for life, really.
Well, it does, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, so we have to be careful what we teach, how we teach.
Yeah. There has to be a lot of thought that goes into it.
That's right. Yeah. As long as we don't overthink it.
And yes.
Then get too complicated.
It's that balance, isn't it?
Yeah, I think too, maybe just remembering that it's just a horse.
Mm.
It thinks like a horse, it behaves like a horse. So we have to understand how they think or how they react.
Yes, that's right. And match that.
Yeah.
And so I think earlier, about 40 or so minutes ago, in our last bit of our podcast before it cut out on us, you had just started to tell me about how with your own horses you were saying that you didn't want to do anything that you wouldn't want done to yourself. And I think you were starting to tell me about kind of the path that you headed down. You said it was a little bit different to what other people did or do.
Yeah. Well, funnily, you know, one of the things I thought about, I mean, we all tie our horses up because it's a necessity. If you're going out competing or whatever you do and you tie them up, and I always tied my horses up too, and if you're floating, obviously. But, you know, with these guys here, we don't go anywhere. We just stay here because that's what we do. I don't want to go anywhere anymore.
Yeah.
And then I had this idea that I don't want to tie them up. And so I've had all my horses here, apart from the ones I've sold, of course. They have to be taught that.
Mm-hmm.
So the horses that live here, none of them have ever been tied up. And I do everything with them exactly like I would have done had they learnt to tie up. And I actually think that I get more response out of them by not prohibiting them from doing anything, by giving them the choice. And 9 times out of 10, they choose to stay with me. Like if I'm trimming their feet or picking their feet out, for example, they'll stand there. And then one time, perhaps I'm picking out one of the guy's feet and he goes, actually, I'm thirsty, I'm off. And he'll just take his foot away and he'll go over to the water bucket and have a drink.
Yes.
And I go, oh well, okay, you know, I've set myself up for that. And so I just accept that and I wait for him to have a drink and that, okay, let's start again.
Yeah.
And I just sort of find that I think I've had a different response from my horses because everything is about choosing to be with me.
Yeah, that's so beautiful, isn't it? And there's that thought of, oh, well, if you let it put its foot to the ground, then it's going to learn to do that every single time. But it just isn't like that, is it?
No, because they don't think about forward planning.
Mm.
You know, they're just totally in the moment. And, you know, and this horse, his name is Shadow, he just thought, I'm thirsty, I'm going to have a drink.
I'll be right back.
Yeah. Or, you know, he might go to, you know, maybe he might want to do that again and I'll go, hey, oi, no. Thank you. You stay here with me. You can do that in your own time. You know, because there has to be, you know, I mean, I'm not a complete idiot. There has to be a bit of a respect thing. And, you know, when I'm working with them or when they're with me, it's got to be, I've got to be able to call the shots.
That's right. It's interesting. I was just thinking about, like, as you were saying that, it's just like with I was thinking about my daughter, and say if she said, maybe we're having dinner or something, and she says, "Oh, I'm busting to go to the toilet. Can I be excused to go to the toilet?" And I'd be like, "Sure, of course you can." But then maybe at bedtime, when I can tell she's procrastinating, like, "I've just got to get a glass of water. I've just got to go to the toilet." And that's sort of when you say, like, "Enough is enough now."
Exactly. And actually, I think the horses really do remind me of children.
Yeah.
And you know what? I think too that if I'd had the wild horses before I'd had my children, I'd have probably been a better mother.
Yeah, interesting. What do you think you would have changed?
I would have been a lot more calm and a lot more patient. Before I got the wild horses, I wasn't a very patient person and I wasn't a very tolerant person. And I don't think I was that adaptable.
Right.
They've actually made me a better person.
Yeah, I agree for myself as well.
I think I'm nicer to be around most of the time.
And I think perhaps it brings an awareness as well. Like, I find sometimes if I am in a bad mood or I'm feeling a certain emotion, that I have awareness of it and perhaps don't take it out on other people like I might have done before I practiced working with horses so much.
Yeah, that's great. Well, that's great because you're still young, Ellie. So imagine how marvelous you're going to be as you get older.
Well, the plan is to keep on learning, so I should hope so.
Well, that's the lovely thing, isn't it? Like we still keep learning.
Yes.
You never ever stop learning. Because this isn't actually a learning thing. This was just an observing thing. I was out in the paddock giving them hay yesterday morning, and the hay was a little bit coarse in places. And I just put it down on the ground, and I was just walking past Chester actually, and I saw him pick up a bit of hay in his mouth, and the hay was sort of long grass, it was sort of knotted. And you know what? He put his mouth down on the ground with the hay still in it. And he put his foot on the hay to
Oh,
separate it.
wow. That is so neat, isn't it?
And I thought, you guys are just incredible because he really thought about it. And so
Yeah.
he used his foot as a tool.
That is so neat. Gosh, they're smart.
Yeah, they're incredibly smart.
Yeah. And so, did you have any horses from this latest muster, or do you take in any more, or how do things work for you nowadays?
Well, I've probably worked with about 90 of them in over the years,
Wow.
and I'm getting older now, and when I kept these horses, I told them that they were going to be with me, the ones I've kept obviously, were going to be with me for the rest of my life because I sort of felt that I had a moral obligation to do that. And I'm getting older, so no, I don't get any more horses. And anyway, my husband would leave me. New horses, they're not welcomed by this group of horses. And, now I think I've sort of done my bit. I'm just sort of enjoying just doing what we do. I have groups of people come here to see the horses, and they've learnt a few little tricks and that sort of thing to show that, they really are quite intelligent and happy to work in harmony with me and that sort of thing. I used to do it quite a lot. Now I don't do it quite so often because actually it is a lot of hard work.
Yes.
Yeah, no, we're sort of just we're just sort of cruising and just
That's great.
enjoying ourselves.
How awesome. And I think even the fact of having your book as well, that does so much good as well for future people that are taking on Kai Manawas, so they can learn from your experiences as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, I love writing. That's, I'm always writing. I've got bits of writing all over the house, because I've got another book in my head, and it's at the moment it's on all sorts of bits of paper, and they're sort of scattered everywhere. And so one day in the near future, I'm going to gather all these thoughts, because I'd love to write about the behaviours that I've observed and noticed and all that sort of thing.
Yeah,
It's something that
great.
pushes my button anyway.
Yeah, I think I have a book inside me as well, but it's kind of finding the time or creating the time in my life to do it. But I guess it will happen when it's the right time.
Exactly. We've all got a book. In all of us, I think, Ali. I mean, I've got so many books in my head at the moment, and I'm trying to think how I can put it all into one book, and I think that might be a bit silly. But yeah, it'll come. You'll do it. You'll do it when you're ready.
That's right. Oh, that's so exciting. So I think we should probably about wrap up. We've been chatting for almost an hour and a half now.
We'll just be repeating ourselves or getting very boring.
I'm sure people will love to listen till the very end. So, what does working from the inside out mean to you?
Well, being mindful and knowing that the horse is a horse, and treat it like a horse.
Yeah, that's awesome. Very
Yeah.
cool. Well, where can people find out more about you and purchase your book?
I sell my book online, and I've got a web page, or web, whatever you call
One of those things.
it. Robin Sisley, that's Robin Sisley, Sisley, and if they just my website, I think is called, it'll be either that or Eat the Wind. And so my book's for sale there.
Awesome. What inspired your name of your book?
Well, Eat the Wind is actually a Maori translation of Kai Manawa. And I never actually got round to putting that in the book. I should
Interesting.
have. Yeah, because Kai, of course, is food, and Manawa is sort of the wind or the whatever. But it's a loose translation of Kai Manawa.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Well, I thought it was appropriate on. Because the book is sort of multi-layered. It's not really about me, but it is about the journey of a woman who has self-doubt and is able to achieve something because she's really passionate about it. But and it's also about the horses, and I'm trying to get their personalities across and that sort of thing.
That's awesome. Very cool. Well, hopefully, some people will jump on and grab your book after listening to this because it's definitely worth the read.
Oh, cool. Well, thank you very much, Ellie, and thank you very much for having me.
My pleasure.
It's been a real pleasure talking to you.
Thank you. Likewise.
Cool.
Cool. Thank you so much, Robin. I will end our recording here and we will talk again soon, no doubt.
Hey, that's cool, Ellie, and I just wish you all the best with everything that you've got coming up. It's very exciting. You're going to have a wonderful life.
Oh, thank you so much.
Okay, lovey.
Bye.
Bye.
Cool bananas. This podcast was proudly brought to you by Finesse Equestrian Training. You can find out more at finesseequestrian.com or the Facebook page. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast and share it with your friends so that everyone can benefit.